Oh man, it's 6 p.m. and that means it's time for the bullpen, starring the one and only Joe George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
Listen and be fascinated as the longtime producer becomes untethered by lesser talent and can truly talk sports the way he was meant to, with no reins or restrictions, with stellar takes and perfect diction.
I'm assistant regional manager. I should know first.
Assistant to the regional manager.
Yeah, okay.
Now, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen with Joe George.
Welcome in to The Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I am Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. For the first time since 2018, the Houston Texans have won three straight football games. That is so sad, but it is so good that the Houston Texans are officially out of the bottom of the NFL. They have set up probably the biggest game. We were talking about this on the Killer Bees. The biggest game the Houston Texans have had since they played against the Kansas City Chiefs in 2019. It's really hard to argue anything else. I mean,
yeah. What else would you even nominate?
Maybe the last game of the season last year.
I mean, you would nominate the Jaguars game from earlier in the season.
Yeah. Is this Sunday's game bigger than when Lovie Smith had the chance to lose the number one pick last year?
I mean, he came through for us. We didn't know it at the time, but he came through for us.
He came through in the biggest way possible.
I mean, Dusty Baker said we one day we'll thank him for Yonder Diaz. This is the moment where we thank Lovie Smith for CJ Stroud.
We've been thanking Lovie Smith for 8 weeks now, or however long it's been. CJ Stroud, look, this game was absolutely a tale of two halves. The first half, CJ Stroud, the offense, were very good. And we'll get into some of the Tank Dell stuff, what he did this weekend. And obviously the second half was not great for the Houston Texans and their offense. It wasn't the worst game of the year, I would say, offensively. I still think that, you know, they didn't score, so it's hard in the second half. But the Ravens game, I thought C.J. Stroud was much worse. Really, the first half of that Colts game. But look, this was not C.J. Stroud's best football. But what matters is that you won. It is that the Texans, for the third straight week, not just three wins in a row, but they have found a way to hold on to a close game at the end. You know, the previous two games, it was C.J. Stroud leading the team down the field, getting the victory. But, you know, the Bengals game, we saw the defense step up in big plays with the interceptions. This week, it was really the defense at the end. C.J. Stroud throws the interception to the left side of the field when he's trying to hit Tank Dell. And he gives Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals the ball back with a chance to get the victory. And the defense has held strong. Will Anderson, you know, gets the pressure on that last play of the game. Steven Nelson gets the breakup. I kind of feel like people are overhyping that play a little bit. I'm not really sure how catchable that ball was, but he deflected it, and the Texans won the game, and that's all that really matters. But it was nice to see the defense, after that first drive, really figure it out, because that first drive, Kyler Murray was cooking. And really, most of the game, I thought he played really well. He is going to put the Cardinals in a blender, I feel like, where he's owed a ton of money, but he's played really good football for the first 2 weeks. They're going to have a tough decision, I think, with what they're going to do in the draft. It's really just going to depend on how much they love Drake May or Caleb, I'm too scared to talk to the media, Williams. Because, like, that guy
sucks. That's his new official nickname?
We're going to get to this, our five observations from the NFL and college football weekend. I'm going to tease one. I'm out.
You're out on Caleb Williams,
I'm out. Okay, I'm out on Caleb Williams.
As a Bears fan, that's even more of a significant statement because he could end up being the quarterback of your team.
I'm out. And when he's the Bear, I'm going to be excited. But for now, I'm out.
There it is.
But I'm declared to be out on Jim Harbaugh.
Because you won't talk to the media?
I'm out on Harbaugh. I'm out on Caleb. And the Bears are going to get both of them. I'm going to be forced to like both these guys. And I'm not ready. That's why I entered and left the transfer portal. Couldn't find my Texans hat today, so we went with the red and black Houston hat, Astros hat. But look, the Texans are – it's like baffling like where they are. The fact that next week they're going to play at NRG – and if they beat Jacksonville, they will be in first place in the AFC South. They're not even like they're not even the last team in the playoffs anymore because
they're ahead of Pittsburgh. Yeah, because Cleveland beat Pittsburgh. Yeah,
yeah, and you beat Pittsburgh earlier in the year. Like you control your destiny to not just win your division,
the craziest. Yeah,
it's bizarre. It makes
you control
no sense.
Your own destiny. And the schedule sets up perfectly. Not just beyond the Jaguars game, you got the Jets coming up. They don't even know who their quarterback is. The Browns, I don't know what to make of the Browns because I don't think their quarterback's going to be any good, but it doesn't seem to matter. They don't even have Nick, they haven't had Nick Chubb since what, week one, and it doesn't seem to matter. But I mean, you got two games against the Titans coming up. That team's not very good right now. You close the season with the Colts. That obviously they're playing another backup quarterback. There's no reason why, and this is a crazy statement, thinking about where the Texans were coming into the season, but there's no legitimate reason why the Texans shouldn't make the playoffs.
I that's where I'm at,
too. If they miss the playoffs, something, you know, unforeseen and terrible happened, because not only do they control their own destiny, but the schedule sets up perfectly.
I said it last week, and I got some hate for it, and I'm not going to back down. This season, it was a fun – I'm looking at the season in two parts. You have going into the year, if C.J. Stroud's a franchise quarterback, he'll do X, Y, Z. It's about numbers. It's not about wins. It's about all the stuff. It's about D'Amico Ryan showing that he's changed the culture, that he's got the defense on the right track. All that stuff's over. We know D'Amico's a good head coach. We know C.J. Stroud's a franchise quarterback. This season's a disappointment if they don't make the playoffs. If they don't make the playoffs this year, this season's a full collapse. I don't see how you look at the Texans' schedule this year and say, okay, now they play some good defenses. You play probably the two of the best defenses in the NFL.
Yeah.
And then Denver has figured it out.
Denver's defense is playing, yeah, fantastic as well.
And that game is going to matter. If the Texans do not make the playoffs, it will be because they lose to Cleveland and Denver. I think that in Jacksonville. Like, you could win all the other games and finish right around 500, but you have three opponents in front of you that are either in the playoffs or competing for the playoffs. You have to win those games. And it starts this weekend versus Jacksonville. The expectation going to this weekend, you already beat them once, should be that you're going to beat them again. But this game specifically versus Arizona, you're playing a team that's not super talented. I think there is a real argument they have the worst roster in the NFL. Because even the Carolina Panthers, I think there's more bright spots defensively than there is on Arizona. But they're well coached and they played you tough. But it was a game that it just exposed something that we've talked a lot about on this show. It exposes the Texans' biggest flaws, I think. And that is the, you know, fourth and short, not converting in the red zone. The last 2 weeks, the turnovers have been not a huge problem because you won both games, but C.J. Stroud has 6 turnovers in the last 2 games, something we hadn't seen from him the entire season. But the Texans' biggest problem is really it's the short yardage stuff. And really, like, when you need it the most. And they keep getting away with it. But next week, if you do not beat the Jacksonville Jaguars, I feel like it's going to come down to a fourth and short, a 2-point conversion, a 3rd and 3 that, like, you need at the end of the game, that, like, you're just not going to convert because they haven't done so far. And that's what's going to hurt them. That is the number one criticism I will give this team, is that they have, since week one, when they went for it on 4th down twice, they have had the same problem over and over and over again, and they haven't found a solution. My hope is that Damian Pierce will be back this week.
That doesn't fix it, Joe. And that doesn't fix it.
If it's, I mean, fourth, it's better and
than
one,
it's better than handing Andrew Beck the football.
Yeah,
I mean,
please stop doing that.
I don't know if you saw me die inside every time they hand it off to a fullback on my Twitter meltdown. Usually revolves around them handing it off to Andrew Beck on a short yardage situation. But look, Bobby Sloak has done a lot of things right. I think he's adjusted well to help protect CJ with some of the max protections. You've seen them run a lot of pass route plays very successfully. He deserves a lot of credit, but not being able to figure out how to put some things together in short yardage situations is troubling. One, don't hand it off to a fullback. Two,
please stop.
We know Damian Pierce, and maybe this gets fixed in year two, but he's not a fit right now for this zone scheme. Maybe, look, these guys are not offense. These offensive linemen aren't offensive linemen that have only run zone scheme for their entire life. Maybe in a short yardage situation with Damian Pierce, your hammer out there at running back when he's healthy, run a more traditional power scheme type of play. That's an adjustment they can make. Or really, just who are the two best players in the offense? C.J. Stroud and, strange to say about third round rookie, but Tank Dell.
I was assuming that was going to be your answer.
Put the ball in their hands. Tank Dell, if you put him out there in the slot and he runs some sort of little zag route where he cuts one way and then comes back the other, who in the world is going to stay with him in that short yardage situation? I mean, put the ball in CJ's hands. Get Tank Dell involved, whether it be with the run, with the sweep or something, or in the short yardage passing game. if nothing else, do that. But I'd like to see them be more maybe traditionally a power run game with Pierce in those short yardage situations.
Yeah, look, they need to find an answer. Like, you know,
it's not Andrew Beck.
Yeah, it's definitely not Andrew Beck. Good moment with his dad, but besides that, like, please stop giving him the ball.
You can't have the football anymore.
That's why fullbacks is a dying breed.
Should be.
Except
for Kyle Juszczyk.
But look, this is where, like, this game, I think it, what's good about it is that CJ Stroud was the answer the previous 2 weeks when you needed him. And it's been like multiple times this season. The Atlanta Falcons game, you were the answer. But like this game, you know, versus the Cardinals compared to Atlanta, you know, the Atlanta, CJ Stroud drives down the field, he gets the touchdown, you have the lead, and then Atlanta walks right back down the field and they get the victory. This week, CJ Stroud makes a really bad throw. Maybe his worst interception he's had so far.
Yeah, I think you agree with me. I think I saw this on the rundown, but two of those three picks were definitely his fault.
Oh, yeah.
The one where it hit Bobby Trees in the hands, I give him a pass on that one.
And that one's like interception karma.
Yeah.
Because he's had so many interceptions this year that have just been dropped.
Right.
Or the defense has been right there and just missed it. That was just straight up interception.
But the one
karma
to Nico and then the out route, the last one of the game, were totally on CJ.
So CJ throws the pick, and then like we said, Arizona moves the ball down the field. They're in position to score, but you get it to the fourth down. Will Anderson, who had a pretty good game, gets to Kyler Murray, forces the throw, and then Steven Nelson gets the pass breakup. That game right there, like, that was impressive from the defense. I thought Derek Stingley Jr. had a really impressive game. Like, and we're going to talk about, you know, a quote that came out from the Texans today from Malik Collins about how much of their best future is ahead of them. And I think a lot of that conversation for me is going to start with Derek Stingley Jr. and what he can be for this defense. But there's other stuff. There's plenty of good. There's plenty of bad and not really a ton of ugly, I would say, besides, I think, specifically that last interception from CJ. But it was a good Texans victory, their third straight win, first time since 2018. It's a good day in Houston. Once again, a victory Monday here on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We'll hear from DeMeco Ryans and CJ Stroud. We continue to talk about the game yesterday here on the bullpen.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Dude.
You know what old Jack Burton always says at a time like this?
Who?
Jack Burton. Me.
After a full day's work of producing and corralling all of the individual conflicting personalities at ESPN 97.5, well, if you're Jumpin' Joe George, you do another hour of sports talk. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen.
The Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, Joe George and Brian McDonald with you guys today. You can find us on Twitter at Sacked by BMAC, at Joe George Radio. What are your reactions to the Texans game? 713-780-3776. What did you learn? What are you happy with? What are you not happy with? Before we get into the thing I'm the most happy with in this game, because I guess there's a couple, besides just the play of CJ Stroud in the first half, there's a couple other things that really stood out in this game that we have to talk to. But first, I want to go to DeMeco Ryans. DeMeco, after the game, talked about just how this game got close because of the team's mistakes.
I feel like in the second half, it was totally us and our mistakes that stalled us on offense, right? And defensively, it's our mistakes that allowed them to continue to move drives. We stood up on fourth down, but we shouldn't have let them get in those situations. We have to improve our tackling. We got to be better in that situation.
So the one thing, like, we kind of talked about some of that stuff in the first segment. The mistakes is definitely what's hurting the Texans, and it has for a couple weeks now. Before, some of it was penalties more, which we saw less of this game this week, and last week it was definitely more of the turnovers. But the one thing he said in there that this team needs work on is tackling.
I mean,
it is like fundamental. They have some tackling problems.
You know what blew my mind? Was looking at the box score after the game and realized James Conner hadn't run for 300 yards.
Yes.
Like, he was actually, if you just looked at the total rushing yards he had, he was actually, if you just looked at that and didn't watch the game, it's like, oh, they held him in check. But it felt like any time that the Cardinals actually wanted it, they ripped off a 6-7 yard run on the Texans.
Yeah, that was definitely one thing.
And we saw some of that in the preseason too. We've seen
early on in the year.
Yeah, early on. So look, I mean, there's been some games where they've held the run in check, but when teams are actually good at running the ball and they have a Gosh, I mean, James Conner hasn't done it just against the Texans. He's actually been pretty good despite his age and his injury history. Whenever they face the dynamic running game, this has been a problem, which, hey, you're facing Travis Etienne, who hasn't been great as of recent, but he is a guy that can break it away and take it to the house from 80. So
yeah.
you can't miss tackles against him.
No, it definitely was something that – what's weird about this Texans defense is they don't really get beat the same way very often. Like, sometimes it's the run game. We've seen quarterbacks throw all over them. I mean, sometimes it's been Desmond Ridder and Gardner Minshew
who have been balling out.
Yeah, and you have, you know, Joe Burrow obviously had a very good game against the Houston Texans, or at least the after the interceptions. But, like, so what's weird about this defense is, like, and maybe it's a good thing, is that they're not getting, you know, beat to death in the run every single week. They're not just getting burned over the top consistently. The defense, like, teams are finding different holes, but then DeMeco Ryans, it seems like they're doing a really good job of adjusting so far this season. And that's what I think is one of the most encouraging parts of this team, is that, like, they're just finding a way to get it done on both sides of the ball in a bunch of different ways. We've seen, you know, whether it's Jonathan Greenard have monster games and sacking the quarterback. This week, Derek Stingley Jr. having a very good game. Offensively, we're seeing Singletary run all over the place the last 2 weeks. That conversation, it's over. It should be,
but I mean, the quotes we've heard from Bobby Slowik is once Pierce gets back, it's basically going back to the way it was.
I think I might be out on Bobby Slowik then. Like, I hope
he's just having Pierce's back publicly. And I mean, not to say that Pierce can't be involved at all. Singletary shouldn't get 100% of carries, but this needs to go to like a 70-30 time split in Singletary's favor.
Yeah, I think that's also very clear. Like, they've just run the ball so well. He sees the field in a good way. Look, Devin Singletary is not this elite running back, but he was a starter in Buffalo. He does have a track record in the NFL where he's good for these games. These are not the first 100-plus yard games he's had in his career. He's not, you know, Jonathan Taylor. He's not, hell, he might not even be Zach Moss,
who was also with him in Buffalo. I think he's even better than what he showed in Buffalo because I agree. In Buffalo, they kept trying to force a timeshare with Zach Moss for a couple years. And obviously, with Josh Allen, the quarterback, he was never going to get goal line because that was going to Josh Allen basically every time. And then obviously, they drafted James Cook. So I just don't think Singletary, for whatever reason, the Bills weren't really fully ready to invest in making him a feature back.
Maybe they just don't know what they're doing, because it's possible. I hate the way they use James Cook as well.
Yeah.
Like,
good point. They're doing the exact same thing right now to James Cook. They're basically treating him as a between the 20s running back.
And, like, what has Zach Moss done this year in Indianapolis? What is Devin Singletary doing here in Houston?
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, they just – Buffalo is just – that franchise is something. But with – the other thing I want to hear from, and we'll hear from C.J. Stroud here, it's a lot of times I think you can tell when a quarterback is not going to have it is because they fold. And in the big moments with C.J. Stroud, what's been so impressive is, and going back to the first interception, I know that first interception he threw was weird because whoever they were playing, they fumbled it, and he got the ball right back, and they went down and scored. I guess that was the Saints game. He constantly, when there's a mistake or something that goes wrong, like, as much as beef as I have with the fourth and one, the third and short, that all that failed stuff, he doesn't lose confidence. Here's C.J. Stroud after the game talking about how it's never going to be easy in the NFL.
This league and in these games towards the end of November, going into December, man, they're not going to be easy. And it's all about just not blinking. And I really think that this team is building a callus to that. We don't have to live in that world, which I know we keep doing it, but we could start putting people away too. That would be helpful and be cool, but it is what it is, man. You get any way you can in this league. You want to win. That Cardinals team had really good DBs and really good players, and we still threw the ball really well. But, of course, everybody's going to highlight the turnovers and everything, and that's fine. But at the end of the day, we're going to keep doing us and keep proving ourselves right, you know. So I'm really blessed to be able to get these type of wins, but we don't have to. We're hopefully going to stop doing that. But if we need to pull out the bag, we will.
Yeah, look, that I agree with everything you just said there. Like, they don't have to be doing this. But that's where I think the Texans are – it's very clear. Like, DeMeco keeps saying it in the post-game press conferences. They're a good team. But what's weird is when you look at the AFC, Miami's not playing good. Their offense is really struggling at times. Now, Tyreek is a monster. You have the top of the AFC with the Chiefs and Baltimore, Whoever that next team is a huge question.
Is there any team that you fully believe in other than the Chiefs in the AFC? Like, no questions. No questions, no concerns.
No, because Joe Burrow's out.
Right.
There is no one.
Yeah, and you know the Dolphins are one Tyreek injury away from completely falling apart.
And, like, some, like, tough DBs away from being broken. Like, right. That's one thing. It's not just good teams. They play a solid defense, and their offense falls apart. So what I'm saying is this, that the Houston Texans can be that team. The Houston Texans have the ability to be the third team in the AFC. I'm not saying, like, this is a Super Bowl year. I know I'm on the record that they will go. We got asked today during Mailbag Monday, will CJ and DeMeco win one? I said yes. I'm going to stand by that they are going to win a Super Bowl. I'm not going to back down. But this year, the AFC is more open towards the top than I think we've realized. And that it's because the Chargers fell apart, Joe Burrow got hurt, Jacksonville does not scare me. It should not scare anyone. Now, Trevor Lawrence played really good this weekend, and they could go over on a run in the playoffs, and I don't think it should shock anyone either. They have the talent on both sides of the ball to do a run. But you have Cleveland, you have Pittsburgh, who are in the playoffs right now. They're not going to be a threat to win multiple games in the postseason. But what C.J. Stroud said there is what is the key, is that they've had the chance to blow these teams out, to score multiple possessions, to put up 40 points in a game, and they've just failed to do so. And that's why there's still so much more to come for this team. And we're really going to deep dive in that into the next segment. So the last thing I want to say about this game from this weekend, Tank Dell is a freaking superstar.
Man, that he's guy so good.
Is
he's so good.
Now, he is the all-time. What's weird about this season is, like, the Texans, all the hopes and dreams we could have had, we are seeing maybe two of the biggest anomalies we've ever seen in the NFL. We are seeing a quarterback who has come in, wedged himself into the MVP conversation, is going to lead his team to the playoffs, possibly win the division, I think win a playoff game. And then you've got this other guy who we did this right when Tank Dell got drafted on the Killer Bees. We're all excited. We tried to find a comp. It didn't exist. There is no one in the history of the NFL that has done what Tank Dell is doing right now at his size. It makes no logical sense. There is not a guy out there. Every name you might text me right now or tweet at us or put on Twitch, you're wrong. He's 3 inches shorter.
Yeah, like, he's
tiny.
Even a guy as small as Devonta Smith is way bigger than Tank Dell.
He's like 5 inches taller than Tank Dell. Tank Dell is slight and he's short, but he's a monster. I love this guy. I loved him at U of H. And I'm not, like, don't have any ties to that program, but, like, Tank Dell was fun to watch. And I think Steve Smith, before the draft process, was right. He said he's one of the best wide receivers in this draft. And frankly,
it was just the size. If it wasn't for the size, he would have been drafted higher.
100%.
Texans, like, would have never had a chance.
Like,
at him.
You think the Los Angeles Chargers are upset?
Good Lord, Quentin Johnson. I mean, that drop he had.
I don't think he's had more than five catches in a game for the Chargers this season.
I know he had five once, and that came after the Mike Williams injury.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, at that time, Joshua Palmer wasn't back. Jalen Guyton wasn't back. I mean, Herbert had no one else to throw to after Keenan Allen other than Quentin Johnson. So even those five catches are a little bit hollow.
And I told you guys, some of these guys, you can give me names. It's not going to work, okay? Lone Ranger, Dante Hall. When was Dante Hall a good wide receiver in the NFL?
The only thing I remember from Dante Hall leave
studios?
Is returning kicks and walking out of studios.
Yeah, like, he wasn't a good wide receiver in the NFL. Tank Dell is legitimately, I don't want to say a one.
Is an interesting conversation, because the whole conversation around this wide receivers room, I think probably until this last week, is, oh my God, like, Nico and Tank Dell and maybe, hey, Noah Brown's breaking out. Maybe you have your 2, 3, and 4 to pair with the alpha wide receiver you get in the first round of this upcoming draft. But maybe now this is a conversation of Tank's your one, Nico is your 3-ish, Noah Brown fits in somewhere out of that afterwards, and you're looking for another starting, quote-unquote, outside receiver, but it doesn't have to come, you know, top half of the first round, because you're not looking for the same caliber guy, because Tank is your one.
And yes, someone said Wes Welker.
Wes Welker was bigger.
Now, he's an inch shorter, but he has, like, 30 pounds on Tank Dell. So, yeah. Like, he was and just different. You're asking different things. Like the thing with Tank is that the comparison is to a guy like Wes Welker, Julian Edelman. But what you were asking those guys to do versus what Tank Dell does are very different things. Those guys are slants and digs and all the short stuff. Tank Dell is pushing the ball down the field on a consistent basis. He's a special football player. Like, I don't know. Like, C.J. Stroud, when we do our Killer Bees top 10 quarterback rankings, my prediction is that he will end up third on that list going into the 2024 season. Tank Dell, I don't think he'll ever be in like that Chase Jefferson conversation. He doesn't need to be, because what he is a guy that just gets open. And CJ Stroud might not even need that guy. This pairing is going to be really, really special for the foreseeable future. And the one thing that people want to talk about Tank was injuries. Now, he did miss a game. That play was weird. Like, he fell on his head.
It could happen no matter. Like,
look at last week.
The size and injury concern is never going to go away. See, I mean, Tank Dell's going to be in his seventh year, and we're still going to be talking about, well, he's a little small. You have to worry about him being hurt. But specifically, the injury he suffered against Atlanta could have happened. If he was the same size as Quentin Johnson, same thing would have happened.
And that's where, like, a lot of times with Tank Dell, like, the injury stuff, it could be, you can name any wide receiver in the NFL. He is just as susceptible to an injury as Tank Dell is. I don't really think that's that much of an issue going forward. But look, they have something special brewing between Tank and CJ, and it's going to continue throughout the year. Malik Collins today met with the media, and he said that the best football is ahead for the Houston Texans. I agree, but how much better can it get? We discuss that next here on The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Pitter patter.
It's a hard life picking stones and pulling teats, but sure as God's got sandals, it beats fighting dudes with treasure trails.
Inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios, there is a bullpen, and in that bullpen is the brilliant mind of Joe George. Call him now and challenge him in a battle of wits.
The bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We'll do our five observations, non-Texans observations from the NFL and college football weekend in the next segment. Another name here that's being thrown around for a Tank Dell comp is Antonio Brown. 5'10", 185, so, like, just, like, bigger. So, like, they're similar, but he always just, like, towards the end of his career, he looked bigger. Now, it's not a bad comparison. And Antonio Brown was, at one point, probably the best wide receiver in the NFL.
Oh, for, like, 4 or 5 straight years.
Yeah, like, it was very much, he was at the top of that list. Now, like, you had some really great talent, but there always is at the wide receiver position. And also, if you're ever bored, like, I know it's the holidays, so I don't know how many of y'all are actually working this week. If you're ever bored, just Google Antonio Brown. Like, I'm just like, I'm on page like 6.
You're going to get some very different results if you just Googled it. You're going to get some amazing highlights, and then you're going to get other things.
I'm on page 6 of it, just like scrolling through Google, and it's like, arrested for this, charged with this, amazing touchdown catch.
Does it pay his arena football team?
Yeah, like, the Google search on Antonio Brown is elite.
He's living with Tom Brady and Giselle. Yeah.
Like, it's one of those, like, wormholes that, like, you, like, find yourself on YouTube, like, people, like, just, like, doing stupid things. Just Google Antonio Brown if you're ever, like, bored with your life, and you'll be entertained for the next couple hours because
his run,
this Looney Tune.
His run at the top was absolutely amazing. I mean, especially from, like, a fantasy football perspective. I'm trying to find it here on the fly.
Oh, but
it was something like he had, like, 6 straight years where he was either, like, the number one or number two wide receiver in fantasy football. It was insane.
Yeah, he looked, and that would be great. Tank Dell is a special player. I think he is a good player. I don't know how high the ceiling is for him. Like, we got 4218. Says Tyreek, like, kind of puts him in that category. Not in terms of
he doesn't have Tyreek speed.
That's what I think is so interesting about Tank Dell. It's like, he doesn't have the size or the speed, and that's why he fell in the draft. But he runs great routes. He just finds the open space. Like, you saw this in college. He's so smart. And they talked about it in the game this weekend where, like, CJ Stroud points him open, but Tank Dell said he never saw that. They knew when it was time for the scramble drill, They both knew where to go. And that throw, too, perfect. Like, every angle you can find, watch it. It is everything you want to see from your quarterback. But I'm really excited to see, like, what these two guys bring to this offense for the foreseeable future, because it's going to be a lot of fun. So Malik Collins was meeting with the media today, and he said that this team has the best football ahead of them. And we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but just we talked about the Killer Bees like right after we saw the quote, and I've been thinking about it since. And the thing about the Texans is that it's so clear that they have not played their best football. That they, it's kind of like the Astros in a way. Like we talked about, you know, Dusty Baker all year talked about the Astros and how like they just haven't played a full game on a consistent basis. The bullpen was good. The rotation was good. The bats disappeared. Same thing with, and it would just rotate. It was always, one thing was always falling short, and it's why the Astros didn't win the division until the, you know, that final series of the year. I think the Texans are really similar. They have played really good, sound football the entire year, basically. The offense can be elite. The defense can be really solid. Normally, the special teams is pretty good, but like they consistently can't put it all together. And we saw that this weekend. You know, the offense was incredible the first half. The second half, whole lot of nothing. Too many turnovers. The last 2 weeks, way too many turnovers. Six from Stroud alone. The penalties the previous weeks, way too many. The defense getting burned on some big plays, and probably on more than I would like to see, but I'm still pretty happy with what we've seen from the defense. The special teams, I can't wait till Kymie Fairbairn's back. This guy stresses me out.
Me and a buddy were watching the game yesterday, and we both kind of looked at each other. It's like, I think if it's fourth and five or in less, we're just going for it from this point out. I mean, look, it wasn't like it was a 29-yard, you know, chip shot that Amendola missed, but it really wasn't a competitive kick. Like he did not look like a NFL caliber kicker on that one kick that he missed.
Yeah, and last week
he had the leg for it, but it just drift. It just did not look like an NFL.
Yeah, kick. I think it was last week. His first one was like super tight to the bar,
right?
I do not enjoy watching Matt Amendola kick. I think I might have called him Danny. Sorry if I did, Danny. I don't want to insult you that way. Who's the better Texan, Danny Amendola or Matt Amendola?
Danny? I don't know.
Matt. Danny Amendola didn't do anything. He was only here because he was Nick Caserio and Jack Easterby's lackey. So, look, I think...
Doing nothing is better than missing field goals.
Good point. Look, this team has the best football ahead of them, and I think the biggest thing that you can look at is like the fourth and one with Boone. They run a toss play. It makes no sense why they do it. But the big thing, and we've been going back to this since really the Pittsburgh game, that when they cross the 50-yard line, this team is not converting on a consistent enough basis to become a great football team. Because that's where I'm at with the Texans. They are a good team. That's established. The season is a success. No other way to look at it. But from where they are now to where they can go, that's where if they miss the playoffs, it's a disappointment. If they don't make the playoffs, it's because they can't convert in the red zone, because they don't convert enough when they cross the 50-yard line, because these turnover issues we've seen the last 2 weeks continue. And that's where I do believe that the best football for this team is ahead. And I'm not talking about next year, because like next year, we talked about this the other day. I think, I don't remember if you were producing that day, BMAC, but there's going to be a national radio or television host that is going to get a ton of heat for predicting the Texans to go to the Super Bowl. Fact or
next
fiction?
Year? Oh, yeah. Next year. No, that's fact.
100%. I'm pretty locked into Dan Orlovsky at this point, that Orlovsky will be
that
the one.
That is a tradition in July and August to get clicks, is to pick the team that was like 9-7, or I guess 9-8 now, but to pick the team that was like one game below 500 or maybe one game above 500, and they're our Super Bowl pick.
Yeah, maybe Nick Wright will like, you know, show some of his temporary
Houston
roots.
Hold on. He's a Chiefs fan. He's not going to pick the Texans to get the Super Bowl.
Good point. Yeah. Thank you, BMAC. But like this team, the best football is ahead for this team, and it starts this weekend. You're playing a team that is currently in first place in the division, and you have the chance to show up and show out that the first game wasn't a fluke. Because the one thing with this team, like, and I saw King of Twitch asking this earlier, is like, who have the Texans beaten this year? Well, they've played five teams so far that are at or above 500. I also don't care. You play who's on your schedule.
I mean, the Steelers and Jaguars both have winning records.
And they're both in the playoffs.
They're both in the playoffs, right.
Now, the Steelers, that team is a joke. They are a team of mystery of how they are above 500. It is the most baffling thing.
They beat the Bengals with Joe Burrow in Cincinnati.
Don't understand.
That's three quality wins.
Yeah, so like they beat the Bengals. Look, so the Texans, that signature win, they got it. They got the Cincinnati win. Now, this next one's a big one because how you establish yourself this season, the game versus Jacksonville is going to be that storyline. Are you a division winner or are you a wild card team? Because if you win this weekend, you are going to win the division. That's my belief. That if you beat Jacksonville with the rest of the schedule you have in front of you, two games versus Will Levis, one game versus Gardner Minshew, one game, it could be Joe Flacco. Yeah, now,
that's called
Tim Boyle is going to be the starting quarterback for the New York Jets when you play them. The only like competent quarterback you play the rest of the season besides Trevor Lawrence is Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Like everything you play this year, most of those guys will be competing for jobs on the Roughnecks next year. Like they're not even NFL starting caliber quarterbacks. They are backups, third stringers, fourth stringers. You're a fifth stringer, Joe Flacco, if he's starting by them, which you don't sign him if you don't intend on playing him, for the record.
No, yeah, Flacco's not going to play. He's not going to sign the contract unless the Browns tell him he's going to play.
And I think Joe Flacco is going to play. It's almost time for elite Joe Flacco in Cleveland.
It's so nice to have elite Joe Flacco back
in
our
Joe
life.
Can Joe Flacco be the one that breaks the Cleveland curse?
Oh, that'd be amazing.
No, it won't, because it would come at the expense of the Houston Texans. we got asked this question earlier.
I do want to see Joe Flacco in the playoffs, though.
Oh, I do, too. I very much do, too. It would be hilarious.
Oh, by the way, there's a third playoff team that the Texans have beat this year. The Saints are also in the playoffs.
That's
as
right.
Of now.
Yeah, the Saints are another one,
too. Three playoff teams plus the Cincinnati Bengals in Cincinnati with Joe Burrow healthy.
Yeah, so look, that to me is like the Texans are on, like what they've done this season, it really is just, I know there was the ESPN article that said unfathomable. That's the right word. I don't think I said it right.
Unfathomable? But yeah, you got
maybe
it.
Maybe I did. It just sounded wrong as it rolled off the tongue. But look, I'm impressed. And the best football is ahead for this team. And even though yesterday wasn't the prettiest victory, it also just doesn't matter. It does not matter if you win ugly or you win pretty. Now, there are going to be people, I got a DM today that said, what are you going to say about the Texans and all these one possession games they're winning? Because I crushed the Minnesota Vikings and called them frauds for going 11-1 in one score games. And you're right. Like, it'd be nice to win some games by more than one score. But when
next year, exactly. Maybe, yeah, the schedule's going to get harder. You can't repeat your success in one loss games, but or one possession games. But we're not talking about next year. We're talking about this year,
exactly.
And as you laid out the quarterback slate that the Texans were going to go against is absolute just complete garbage. And the idea, they're 6-4 now. Will Anderson isn't killing it as far as his sack total. You got wide receivers like Noah Brown just now is breaking out into whatever he's going to become. Dalton Schultz took a few games before he got going. The offensive line took a while to get going. Damien Pierce hasn't done anything. Derek Stingley is just now starting to find a groove. Obviously they've dealt with a ton of injuries, and Denzel Perryman's out for a couple of games with suspension. There's no reason that this team can't go up because they're not playing with. I don't know what you would call the level of game they're playing right now, but it hasn't been their A-plus game because they've had too many injuries and too many guys with slow starts.
Yeah, I would say looking at the Texans season so far, if you're going to go the letter grade route of like where this team has played collectively, I think it's still an A. And the reason why you wouldn't say A-plus is just because they've left so much on the table.
Right.
And that's to be expected. This was the first game watching C.J. Stroud, really the second half, where I was like, okay, he's a rookie.
Other than the game against the Bucs where C.J. Stroud threw for 470 and 5, you can't really say the Texans are winning because they're getting unrepeatable performances from players.
Yeah.
Like most of the players that are leading them to a win, you can see, in, like specifically with Stingley and some of the young wide receivers who are now getting their first run in the league, there's room for them to grow and get better. They're not even at their peak yet, so they could certainly get a lot better at going over the rest of the season.
All right, our five observations from the NFL and college football weekend. We do that next here on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Dude.
Like I told my last wife, I says, honey, I never drive faster than I can see. Besides that, it's all in the reflexes.
Veridex Community Bank Studios is currently broadcasting The Bullpen. There are no real bulls inside the pen up there, but that would be awesome, wouldn't it? But the only occupant of the bullpen is this guy, Joe George.
All right, five observations from the NFL and college football weekend as we wrap up the show. My number one, there might not be a franchise quarterback in this upcoming NFL draft. I definitely think it's down to two quarterbacks. I like Penix. I like Bo Nix. But they're both older, and I can't imagine either of them going in the top 10. So I think really your top two quarterbacks are Drake May and Caleb Williams. Both guys not playing well or not playing to their best. Now, look, Caleb Williams is a guy that, like, his peak stuff, like, he had the one throw this weekend where he, like, runs up in the pocket and he throws, like, 60 yards down the field. It's incredible. I don't want to be just like you need to wear it after a game, but this whole not talking to the media stuff, it just seems soft. And I think he's soft. And I think I'm out. And it's too much Josh Allen and not enough CJ Stroud.
Don't take this the wrong way. But you, as far as your evaluation sometimes of players, get very caught up on whether or not a player is soft or not.
No, that's more Jeremy.
Okay. I mean, I hear it from both of you. Just because he didn't talk, I mean, there's lots of players that get mad and don't talk to the media.
How many of them are good?
I mean, I'd have to do a Google search on that. I can't think of it off the top of my head.
My thing is, like, it's just everything Caleb does, it feels like when things go bad, he is just... He has the ego is there when he's really, really good. But then when things go bad, he runs and hides. And it's just, I'm not saying for sure, but I just don't get it. Like, he does stuff, like, people want to compare him to Mahomes. I don't see it. Like, he makes one or two throws that are really special. I get Zach Wilson vibes. Like, that's what I,
ooh,
like that's what no. I, that's what I see. Like, I see someone that makes incredible plays in college. But then when he gets to the NFL and the going gets tough, I just don't see it. Like, and he's going to be a Chicago Bear, and we'll see how it goes. And the Bears will get blamed for ruining him too, like they get blamed for ruining Justin Fields. And people are probably right.
I'll say this: if the Bears draft him, then I'll assume you're right because the Bears don't draft good quarterbacks.
But I'm Team Drake May. Like, I'm on, like, Drake May is who I would take. And if I'm the Bears, I'm taking neither. I'm taking a left tackle, and I'm taking Marvin Harrison Jr., and I don't know what I'm doing at quarterback.
I mean, this is not the NFL, but I tell you what, in Dynasty football, if I had the number one pick, it's Marvin Harrison Jr.
100%. Like, yeah.
There's no doubt that he will hit to me. There is. Yeah. I mean, I have less doubt than you do, but I still have a little bit of doubt on Caleb Williams as well.
And maybe with Caleb is that we've pinned him as this, like, generational prospect, and he just can't live up to that hype. And that's not fair to him.
And I also think there, and we talked about this in the beginning of the year when they were still undefeated. Obviously, now they have five losses, but the USC defense is horrible. So I do think at times when the record goes poorly, sometimes for reasons out of the quarterback's control, we put some of that failure onto the quarterback maybe a little bit unjustly.
What's your first one?
My first one is, I mean, can we just, Chargers, can we just go ahead and fire Brandon Staley now?
Please.
There's no reason he needed to be on the flight back to L.A.
Yep.
It's just absolutely wasting Justin Herbert's prime. And obviously they blew it, you know, huge with the Quentin Johnson draft pick. So he's blowing games. I mean, obviously, look back last year at the playoff game against the Jaguars. He's blowing games. He's not making good draft picks. I mean, he's gone backwards with his whole, you know, we never punt fourth down thing. So it's just, it's time to move on. They've wasted the first, 4 years now, Justin Herbert's career. And unfortunately, they've wasted the last probably couple of years of Keenan Allen's career. I mean, I think he still plays next year, but Keenan Allen's going to be stuck in the doldrums now on his last few seasons.
Yeah, their Super Bowl window at this current core, I think, is closed. With where they're at age-wise. So I agree with you. My second one, I got one more college football one. I'd rather see one loss, Oregon, Washington, Michigan, Ohio State in the college football playoff than whoever Florida State's going to roll out there at quarterback with Jordan Travis. We were talking about this on the Bees earlier. I understand why you put in an undefeated ACC champion if they went out and they beat Louisville. If Florida State beats Florida and then Louisville, I get it. But, like, I just...
I'm with you.
I think Oregon, like, Washington, Michigan, Ohio State are all better than whoever they're going to roll out there at quarterback, and it should matter. It should matter that the starting quarterback is out, and there are other good teams that deserve to be in the college football playoff over a team that lost their quarterback. Like, I know that sucks, and the committee's not going to agree with me. They're going to put Florida State in if they went out, but I don't think they should.
Look, I get it. Like you said, it's, you know, it's an undefeated ACC team, but the ACC is not the same ACC as it has been in years past. I mean, Clemson, because they won't pay any players, and Dabo's got to stick to his stupid stuff. I mean, they've obviously fallen off of their, they're a 7-wins team right now. So
yeah,
I just don't think if you beat Florida and Louisville in back-to-back weeks, that's certainly going to make the overall resume look a lot better than it does now. But I agree with you. I would take all those teams over them. And if Texas hadn't blown the last second win against OU, I would put an undefeated Texas over Florida State as well.
Honestly, I might put – God, they're not playing good football.
They're not. We'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, why don't you just roll through, like, your next couple?
All right, I'll go ahead and get to this. So I had this conversation with someone that used to work here on Twitter over the weekend. But his stance was Alabama's going to, go launch ahead of Texas in the playoff standings. And those come out, tomorrow?
Yep.
Tomorrow? He may be right, but the idea that, the thought process that always gets put forward in this is, well, if they play tomorrow, Alabama would win. We don't know that. that's the very definition of an opinion. You may be right. They may win, but we don't know that. The regular season on the field results have to account for something. And I get that Alabama has been playing well recently, but it's not like they've completely blown through the rest of the schedule. They barely scraped by USF the week after Texas. They barely beat Arkansas. A&M played them real close. They fired their coach. So it's not like Alabama is just beating everyone after Texas by 40.
Yeah,
I agree. Both teams are having close games, Texas won in Alabama, that has to account for something.
It has to. And we'll just do one more. So we'll do five total. I agree with you because if the head-to-heads don't matter, then what's the point of playing games?
Yeah.
What's the point of Texas and Alabama playing when if later on in the season you're not going to count it?
Texas had three losses, then of course.
Yes.
Of course. I wouldn't say Texas has to be ahead of Alabama just because of the head-to-head. But if the records are the same.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now look, I think there will be an argument to put Alabama in front of Texas if Texas wins the Big 12 and then Alabama wins the SEC and they beat Georgia. We're in different conversations here because then they've beaten the number one team in the country. But I think it means you have to put Alabama and Texas both into the college football playoff no matter what. Like, your final four, Georgia's out. If Bama beats Georgia...
And I can see that, yeah.
Like, right now, my gut tells me...
Oregon-Washington winner's in, the Michigan-Ohio State winner's in. Then in that situation, Alabama would be in.
And then it should be Texas.
Would they put a one-loss Texas ahead of Florida State, though? I don't think they would.
I know they won't, but, like, for the sake of this argument, Jordan Travis's replacement loses. Okay. But, like, Texas would be the next team in. Like, a Big 12 champ has to get in over Georgia if it were to play out that way. My last observation as we wrap up the show, unlike Pittsburgh, this combination of, like, P.J. Walker, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, and Joe Flacco is going to make the playoffs. I don't know how.
They've done it.
But they're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, they beat the 49ers. They beat the Steelers. I mean...
Yeah. Cleveland's going to make the
playoffs. Even when Deshaun Watson was healthy, he wasn't playing well.
Yeah. If you wanted that Texans pick to be like in the early teens, sorry.
I don't think there's going to be a big gap, but yeah, it's not going to be a great pick.
Yeah, Cleveland's going to make the playoffs. I can't believe that they're going to make the playoffs with the quarterback play they've got. All right, that does it for us. We'll have late hits coming up at 8 o'clock. We'll be back on the bullpen tomorrow at 6. I'll be back with the Killer Bees as well at 3 o'clock for the Lunatics on Twitch. Bye. For the text line and everyone else participating in the show, thank you. Talk to you guys tomorrow.